Welcome in to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field and Matthew and Daniel and Stefania. And for a second there, I was a little bit nervous, Dave, that our drops didn't work. For those that are watching live on the interweb somewhere, they may have seen me hesitate. And I was a little bit worried that maybe you pulled some sort of hijinks on me.
A Matthew? No, I did in fact show up ready. I think because we had a Lisa or Matt Harrington on our ear, we didn't hear the start of the song, but I did in fact hit the button.
Wow. Gotcha.
Well done by
like
you.
No other. Daniel
throwing
Dopp,
people under the
throwing
bus.
Throwing people under the bus.
Yep. Like, one of the first rules of TV, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never throw a producer under the bus.
You have a sound effect for
what
that?
The heck? Hold on. What do you mean? Isn't that the first rule of TV? Never throw your producer under the bus. When Field just said to me, Daniel, I was worried you didn't do the show right. He literally threw me under the bus.
Yeah. But you're not like a producer. You're like Daniel. You're like a whatever. You're like a grandpa in that sweater of yours.
That's
like,
right.
You know what I mean?
That's like, right. It's like literally Lisa, his grandpa, like right?
Lisa's
right.
A legit director.
Yes.
Matt Harrington is a legit TV producer.
Yeah.
You're a guy that pushes buttons on something that we're not even sure goes out to anyone.
That's accurate. Hopefully it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, right. Exactly. I mean, like, honestly, if you're doing your job correctly in terms of presenting the best possible show to our listeners, this never gets published.
Never happens.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the fact is, honestly, I don't know. It seemed weird to me that you would just, I was curious if you had if you could look through your drops and just see if you had like a bus sound effect, just a vroom.
Ooh.
Is that like, or actually, no, I take it back. It's not a vroom. It's a vroom. Yeah. Boop.
It's a screeching halt, right?
Like it's like there's bumps. It's going over Lisa and Matt Harrington because
that's fairly
Secret
graphic.
Scroll, like kind of threw them under.
Okay, yes,
like kind of a couple of speed bumps there.
He did throw them under the bus just a little bit, but we digress because we have major news here, and I'm not talking about stuff like that's happening around the NFL. More important news, Daniel. Perhaps the most important news of the fantasy football season so far.
Yeah.
Last night, the great, the incomparably talented, I mean, she is just on a track to stardom, Dylan Schefter, the lovely daughter of Adam Schefter, did a great favor to all of those who play in the War Room League, and she conducted the draft lottery. Draft lottery, of course, we do not go by the reverse of last year's standings. Every year, we redraft the order, and it's done by picking names out of a hat. In this case, we had a Zoom involved. And number one overall is Lewis Riddick. Not number one overall. Is Matthew Berry. Yep. What pick did you draw out of 16, Matthew?
So it's 16 teams.
What?
And for the second year in a row, I am pick 16.
It's tough to be
I mean,
new,
I have
huh?
a lot of issues. I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
So I think we will agree to this.
Hold on.
Dylan Schefter, Adam's daughter, is wise beyond her years. If you've seen any of her interviews that she's done
she's
with head coaches,
and very
she
talented.
Is. You can't believe this girl is 11. You know what I mean? Like she is a very bright young woman. And so I have to believe the fix was in. I believe I think my ballots got, you know, the name had, you know, it was cold or something.
Frozen
like
lottery
that.
Card? Frozen Patrick lottery. Ewing
2.0? Yeah, exactly. 100%. I'm throwing that conspiracy theory out.
Wow. Yeah. That is audacious.
It's a questionable move.
She's 11.
That's what they claim, but you see her on air. You talk to her.
She's a Danny Almonte of sports media.
She's a brilliant young woman. She's unbelievably bright and well wise behind her years. And by the way, and also a devoted daughter to her father, Adam. I don't know, you know, did Adam suggest this? Did Seth Markman, our intrepid commissioner, suggest this? It's don't you think it's a little questionable to have the daughter of somebody in the league pulling it? I'm just
no, I thought it was highly entertaining. Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think it's amazing that you have the 16th pick. I hope you go 0-12 during the regular season this year.
It's unbelievable, Field. Yeah. Get this. I just want to be clear about this, okay?
Here's the bitter berry.
Oh, do we have a bitter berry?
Not this year.
We do. It's behind
COVID
you.
Stuff.
It's actually up at the top. It's in your football helmet. It kind of looks like you, sort of.
He's got one to his left, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Your other left.
So we don't grab bitter berries anymore.
This is the 11th year of the War Room League draft.
Mm.
16 teams.
Mm-hmm.
11th year.
Mm, tell me more.
In 11 years, I've never had a top three pick.
Terrible.
Only three times in 11 years. Only three times in 11 years, Field.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a pick in the top eight.
Mm.
Oh, like, I've only had a pick in the upper half of the league. Three times in 11 years.
Wow.
Don't you wish you could give him a hug right
You're like
now.
The anti-Washington football team.
It's wow. Pretty good line. And the truth is that if I were representing Dylan Schefter, I would point out the fact that how could she possibly be blamed, considering I've had insanely bad luck, bad luck the entire time that I was that I've been in this league. So I don't know. Anyway, so whatever. Kudos to Dylan and Adam Schefter. I am pick 16. The only thing I can say here, the only positive thing I can say here, Field Yates, last year pick 16, I finished second in the War Room League. Mm. If you are interested in following along to the War Room League, you can follow Scott Clark at @all_biz, the Adam Schefter of the War Room League.
Yeah, he is
the insider.
Hello, Stefania, by the way. Stefania has pick 5.
Hello.
In the upcoming War Room, how do you feel about your selection this year, Stefania?
Well, I've had some good practice. I think I've hovered around the 4 or 5 pick for the last several years. So, and 1 year I did really well. I think we came in second one of the years we were in that top 5 pick. And then last year, you know, not so much.
Well, Stefania,
so I'm hoping for, look, you know what? The fantasy draft, the fantasy marathon draft, I had the 5th pick. So I got a little feel for it. Unfortunately, as you know, 16 teams in our War Room League, which is
makes
everything else go out the window after the first round. Yeah.
I have a question for you, Stefania, and Field and Daniel. Thirsty Kyle, maybe we put up this as a poll. And then we're gonna get to Kenyon Drake, and we got a lot of news to get to. But I have been offered to trade out of 16.
Okay.
I'm not gonna tell you what pick because I don't wanna, but it's somewhere in the middle of the draft. Basically the middle of the draft. So I'm curious, would you rather have the turn in a 16-team league, would you guys rather have 16 or somewhere in the middle of the draft?
I want to be quick about this because I know there's a lot with the league. Is it a 2-quarterback league? Is
one
there quarter, any special?
It's a 1-quarterback league, 16 teams,
team.
PPR.
Just straightforward.
Straightforward. It's an extra flex. You play an extra, you start an extra flex, but there is...
I want the turn.
I think I'd rather be middle of the pack.
I want middle of the pack as well to secure a top running back with that 9th, 10th, 11th, 8th. What would be middle of the pack? 7th to 12th? Whatever.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Okay. Somewhere in that range. That's what I would prefer, personally. All right, let's get it going.
I'm mulling. I'm thinking it over. I'm thinking it over. So we will, we shall see.
Did it hurt?
What? It does. It does hurt. Yeah. It does. It absolutely hurts.
All right, let's get rolling.
It absolutely hurts.
Time now.
And just by the way, the last thing I'll just say, and then we move on. I just want to be clear in case it wasn't. I'm obviously joking about everything. Like, I don't believe there was any actual malfeasance or skullduggery. You know what I mean? I'm just having fun there. I believe it was all on the up and up.
Yeah, we all know as clear. All right, Stefania, let's get to you right now. Dan, you want me to ask her about a couple of injuries? Is that correct? That we're going to get started.
You want to start there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Stefania.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
News or noise?
Loud noises!
Hold on. I totally screwed this up. And you know why? Because I'm reading the wrong show note. That's what happened. So I'm going to take this one. This is totally my fault, Stefania. And Matt Harrington, my apologies. He's talking to me in my ear. And I'm so perplexed. I'm flummoxed by figuring out how Matthew could have such bad lottery luck that my mind is jumbled. What I really wanted to ask you about, Stefania, is actually not news or noise. We'll get to that in just a moment. But yesterday, you were part of a group of reporters that was on a conference call with the league, and they gave some very interesting and important updates on COVID testing and COVID protocols. What did you learn during that call, and what might it mean for fantasy football this year?
I think there are two main things that we learned on the call that I wanted to bring to our audience here. And the first was an update on testing. The league's been doing some fairly regular updates, and I think we've got a graphic of some of the numbers that they released for tests in the last 9 days, August 12th through the 20th, that last grouping of tests. Over 58,000 tests were administered to players and personnel. Of those over 58,000, more than 23,000 tests were of players. Zero positive tests among players during that window, 6 new positive among other personnel. What it tells us is basically that the efforts to protect against the virus in training camp have been largely successful. And I'm told that coaches around the league are very happy because there was a day off, the first day off in camp in that window. and no positive tests returned. So they plan to stay vigilant, but that's good news. The other bit was related to the events of last weekend. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Alan Sills said they noticed an unusual spike in positive COVID-19 tests over the weekend. And when you hear that there were actually zero positive tests in that last window, you can understand why when they saw 77 positive tests over the weekend, they knew there was a potential problem. Now, without getting into all the details, they've done an analysis with the lab, BioReference, they partner with, and it appears that there was a contamination at one of the lab processing sites pre-analysis of the samples that was responsible for these false positives. So obviously steps being taken to try and ensure that that does not happen again, because it obviously threw off schedules for teams. They had to go into automatic isolation and contact tracing because they have to treat those as presumed positive even while they're working through to see if the test is correct or not. What I will say is they thought the silver lining was that they actually got to go through those steps of contact tracing and isolating, and they found it worked very, very well. So looking forward, they hope to not have another scenario like that, but it was a good exercise for them.
Stefania, wonderful information and some encouraging results, I would say, on the whole for the NFL. We'll be back with you in just a few moments. So I wanted to pass along one other note that does pertain to leagues on ESPN. As of now, or as of, I guess, immediately, you can, or ESPN has built in an extra IR spot for a player, and for any injury, but if you are placed on the reserve COVID list, you are eligible to be placed on IR. So something to keep in mind if these tests, and we hope they don't flare up, but if they do wind up flaring up, you have a bit more built-in roster flexibility. And a reminder, you can customize your league to your desire on ESPN.com.
To that point, what you're talking about with the added IR spot is just for the standard league. Like if you just sign up and you don't do anything to your league, if you play in a public league, that's what that is. But if you and your buddies are getting together, or you and your coworkers, your family, whatever, and you're creating a league, you can have five IR spots if you want. You can have 10. You can customize the league to whatever it is you want, whatever rules and settings you want. And so you can have as many IR spots as you want. I would encourage you to have a couple. And just for people to understand that, yes, if a player is placed on the COVID-19 list, they are eligible for the IR spot. So I think that's important to note.
I'm not going to replay the drop because I screwed up asking for it the first time. I'm just going to tell you that we are now starting with News or Noise. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Lewis Riddick has the first overall pick in the War Room League draft. Chiefs GM.
Second time in 3 years.
That's right. And he's only been in the league for 3 years. Yeah. Chiefs GM Brett Veach mentioned recently, or said recently, of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's on pace to have a big year. And why is that pertinent? Because a couple of weeks ago, Lewis Riddick took to Twitter and said, if you have the number one pick in your fantasy football draft this year, you should be taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Chiefs' first-round pick. And so we'll see whether Lewis ends up sort of putting his money where his mouth is, right? And
I bet he does.
Interesting. So, and we don't have to belabor this, but quickly, like, is that a – even if Clyde – so how does that pick justified in your opinion? Like, do you think it gets justified? Does it have to be justified by – Clyde Edwards-Helaire resulting as the number one player in fantasy football? Or is there a process aspect to it that you could sort of wrap your mind around and say, like, yeah, I can build a case for it?
Yeah, I can build a case for it. Here's the case for, and it's not one that I agree with, but the case that I would build for Clyde Edwards-Helaire is this. Number one is that Lou believes in the player's talent. Lou believes in the system and Andy Reid. Obviously, he worked with Andy Reid in Philadelphia, so he understands firsthand just just how talented he is. And the argument is that you think he's going to be something special, that he is going to be Brian Westbrook, who from 2014, who I think was from the 4 years that he was with Andy Reid, he was 2004, 2008, he was the second best running back in fantasy.
Yep.
Then the other thing is that Christian McCaffrey suffers some regression, that offense is completely new, obviously, and that they don't use him nearly the same way, that they get some other people involved. There's some argument about Curtis Samuel. So that's the argument for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. In a 16-team league, you're going for upside, you're swinging for the fences. And so if Lou believes that that's a bigger swing at the fence, CEH, than CMC, then that's the argument for it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it all plays out. We'll see if Lewis does actually go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The draft is the night before the season begins, so I'm sure people will see it all over Twitter. A couple of other questions for
Stephon.
The
reason I believe he does it very quickly is that 2 years ago when he had the number one pick, he was saying Saquon over Todd Gurley, who was sort of the consensus number one years ago. Well, wherever Barkley was not the consensus number one. This is Barkley's rookie year.
Yeah, it feels different to me circumstantially, but at the end of the day, it's people. It's your fantasy team for everybody who's making a pick, whether it's 1, 2, 10, wherever you go, and ultimately, at the end of the year, there's only one winner, and that person is proven correct. Stefan, a couple more injury updates with you, and we talked about this yesterday, but Lamar Jackson did practice yesterday, so news or noise that he is back on the practice field, and this seems to be a thing of the past.
I think it's news in that it confirms that our noise statement from yesterday was correct. That's the news. I mean, look, we said that this was not a big deal. We expected him back yesterday, but you can plan on the Ravens with just under 3 weeks till the regular season begins to be cautious with him, because obviously you don't want something that's not a big deal to turn into a big deal.
All right, Stefano, let's keep it short and sweet there. As you said, this is noise, but or news as a result of noise yesterday. But there is maybe some more pertinent stuff that could actually be interesting and newsworthy. As yesterday we discussed Kenyon Drake and the Cardinals, we learned after the fact that he was in a walking boots, and Kenyon Drake, the threat to Adam Schefter's insider throne, apparently, took to Twitter to break a little more insight. What can you tell us about Kenyon Drake being in a boot?
Well, according to him, he said, "No worries, I'm good." His coach backed it up. Cliff Kingsbury said, "It's not a big deal. It's just nicks and bruises, and they're being cautious with him." And this is that time of year. We're probably going to be saying this a lot, where teams, if something small crops up, they're going to take it easy, scale it back, do everything they can to protect the player so that there's no issue come week one. I will say this. Matthew tweeted about, you know, seeing a player in a walking boot is not ideal. That is true. The problem is a walking boot can be used for anything ranging from a fracture or a major ligament injury to just offloading the weight of the foot so that it's giving the foot a break, if you will. I think that in this case, it's noise, not news, but good observation, Matthew. I appreciate it.
Not a clean, entirely a clean bell health right there from Stefania. So, Matthew, I think it's news. What do you think?
I think it's news as well. Anytime a running back is in a boot, I think that is news. Now, he's saying it's not a big deal. I think he tweeted out, "Hey, I was in a walking boot at this time last year." And I think he did like laughing emoji or something like that. And then, you know, and obviously you hear Stefania, you hear Cliff Kingsbury also say like they don't think it's a big deal. So, okay, fine. It's not a big deal, but it's some sort of deal. It's not a nothing deal.
You know, I'm
like,
with you.
I mean, like, if he's 100% fine, why is he in a walking boot?
I
continue to say what I say yesterday. This news obviously came out yesterday after we published our podcast, which was all about the Arizona Cardinals. Chase Edmonds remains a somebody that you should target in the later rounds of your draft. I think tremendous upside on Chase Edmonds, whether it's insurance for Kenyon Drake or just, you know, if you don't have Kenyon Drake and you want to take a flyer, because I don't want to speak for you, Field, but I feel confident in that you and I both agree that were Chase Edmonds the starting running back of the Arizona Cardinals, we'd be very high on him in fantasy.
Yeah, I think he'd be like a top 18 or 20 running back if he were him as the go-to guy in that backfield. Shout out Fordham, the Rams. That's where he used to play his college football. All right, one more here, Matthew, and we'll be back to Stefania in just a moment. Quick, Cam Newton getting the bulk of work at Patriots practice on Monday. News or noise?
I think it's noise, only because
he's going to be the starter.
He's going to be the starter. Yeah, I think this might have been news like 2 weeks ago, but Cam Newton's going to be the starting quarterback, the New England Patriots.
You heard it here first.
I mean, just stop.
It happens. Please credit Matthew Berry as a result of that fact.
Absolutely.
All right, we're coming back for Double Trouble in just a second, but Daniel has something to say, I believe.
Yeah, just really quickly before we get into talking about our favorite advertisers. When we were talking about COVID and the IR spots we can have, the max that you can have in an ESPN league is four IR spots.
Okay.
So what we're suggesting is if you want more than that, add those four IR spots and then have a couple extra bench spots that your league has designated that you guys know that's how it works.
All right,
I just wanted to be clear on that.
All right.
Yeah, that's my mistake.
Double Trouble coming back in a second, but first, Stefania Bell.
Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed?
Rico!
With Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? Rico's sleeping. No chance for me. As nice as that sounds, it's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
You know, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, Field Yates, you may be up against some obstacles, like having a ton of applicants, but difficulty finding the right ones for your job, or finding time to hire while running your business, plus trying to ensure workplace safety, which I know is important to you. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. Oh, and now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. Hey, check out this stat, Field. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Get better than that. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. To try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Double trouble.
Double, double.
Trouble,
trouble.
Double trouble.
Double, double,
double, trouble. Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
Throwing the flag on somebody. You know, Daniel threw a producer under the bus at the beginning of the show. I'm going to do the same thing to a researcher because our note here says double trouble Oakland Raiders. Kyle, you've been living in a bunker for the past 6 months. The Raiders play in Las Vegas.
I didn't put that label there. I just had Raiders.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I'll throw somebody else under the bus. I just got to figure out who I am supposed to throw under the bus.
Vroom.
All right, let's begin with the Las Vegas Raiders. And by the way,
vroom makes it sound like apparently this bus is going really fast.
Really fast.
The bus from Speed.
Yes.
Like it's just like.
Speed.
Classic. What a good movie.
What a great movie. I haven't thought about Speed in a minute, man.
No, yeah.
That was the movie that made Sandra Bullock a star.
Yeah, that's right. I agree on that. Good take.
And
Keanu Reeves was.
Yeah. By the way, Bill and Ted Face the Music, Bill and Ted 3 coming out soon. Very excited about that.
Nice. I can't wait for movies.
Bill and Ted is one of my favorite movies of all time.
All right, let's talk about the Las Vegas Raiders, who now play their home games at Allegiant Stadium, which looks amazing. The best player on the Raiders offense, in our opinion, I think we agree, is Josh Jacobs. Matthew, you have him at RB 10 or 9, excuse me, and you have him higher than anybody else at ESPN. I've got him at RB 15, and Daniel has him at RB 14. So,
right.
There is a bit of a rankings disparity. I know that's only 6 spots, but that can be a big difference up at this point of the board. Let me start here and just lay up my case for why I'm a little bit lower and a little bit closer to consensus and why I think you are, and then I'll let you have the floor here. Josh Jacobs is amazing. Guy's super talented, right? I mean, he had a very compelling case to be the rookie of the year on offense last season. Ended up being Kyler Murray. Had a ton of carries, right? I mean, he averaged over 20 touches per game, over 100 yards from scrimmage per game. He also suffered a nasty, severe, major shoulder injury that he played through, and he showed incredible toughness to do that. But I don't know if this was simply charged by that or if it was because of other reasons. This offseason, the Raiders, and I know that these guys are not Saquon Barkley's, but they signed Devontae Booker, a once useful player for the Broncos and a very good pass catcher. They signed Theo Riddick. They drafted also a very good pass catcher in his formative years. They drafted Lynn Bowden Jr. out of Kentucky, a utility player who's going to be really fun to watch, and they are working him extensively at running back right now. They paid Jalen Richard $7.5 million on an extension this offseason. Now, I don't know, I would classify those as 4 major investments. I would consider those 2 reasonable investments and then 2 flyers. But I'm just wondering, Matthew, if maybe this team is planning to not utilize Josh Jacobs quite as heavily as they did last year simply because they saw what the rigors of a full season can do to any player. This is also a team that last year, not only did it have Josh Jacobs suffer that major shoulder injury, but Jonathan Abrams, their other, well, they had 3 first-round picks last year. One of their 3 first-round picks, Abram, he suffered a major injury after 1 game and missed the entire season. I wonder if some of this is philosophical. They're saying to themselves, like, these guys can be stars, but we got to manage them a little bit. Are you not buying that?
So let me get this straight. Your concern on Josh Jacobs is Jalen Richard, the ghost of Theo Riddick, Devontae Booker, who couldn't make the Broncos when they didn't have a running back, and Lynn Bowden Jr., who's a nice player, but they're going to use as a gadget guy. They're going to use him at wide receiver. They're going to use him in Wildcat. They're going to do a bunch of different cool things with Lynn Bowden Jr.
Yeah.
Like what? Right. I mean, all those, whatever. Rashard's a nice little pass catcher, and like, I mean, I think there's
a $7.5 million.
Yeah,
it's more than Josh Jacobs makes.
Jalen Rashard was on the roster last year as well. And that was a year in which Josh Jacobs was running back 15. And so what you're saying is that there's absolutely no improvement in Josh Jacobs from year one to year two. You have him at 15. He was running back 15 last year. I think the entire offense is better. I think Josh Jacobs is better. I think he will be used in the passing game more. Now, there's been rumors of like, he's going to catch 60 balls. I don't believe that. But he caught 20 receptions last year in 13 games. Could he get to 40 this year? I do think he can.
Okay.
I absolutely think he can. So that's what it comes down to. And listen, your point's well taken in the sense that like Rashard, Booker, Riddick, Bowden to an extent, all pass-catching running backs. So if you're like, okay, this is the guy that gets it between the tackles and then they're going to use different guys on third down, so maybe they don't use him as much in the passing game as well. But this is a guy who was top 10 among running backs in touches and scrimmage yards per game. He had 6 different games last year with over 20 carries last season. Only Chris Carson had more such games. Since 2014, the only rookie with more such games was Ezekiel Elliott in 2016. The fact is that this kid had a massive workload, came through it great, and John Gruden, he's been public about this, John Gruden is angry that Josh Jacobs did not win Offensive Rookie of the Year last year.
Yeah.
You know, and so I believe they're like, oh, yo, watch us.
I believe way too much of this stuff. Tom Brady's not, he's going to hog a couple extra touchdowns at the goal line.
Yeah. Yeah,
because the Raiders are going to work, going to use.
Oh, my God, Field. This is a very real conversation.
Come on. You don't actually buy this stuff.
I tell you what I do buy. I buy that football players, like everyone else, are human beings. Are 100% right. Human beings, and human beings are driven by emotion. And I will tell you absolutely that they care about stuff like that. Because I know why. You know why, Field?
Why?
And I would be shocked if you say this doesn't happen to you. I get texts and emails, and like when I'm at parties, like whatever, Super Bowl parties or whatever, I run into NFL players, they'll sit there and say like, oh, you had me as a bust. Oh, you had me as a sleeper. Oh, this and that. Like, and if they're paying attention to dumb me. That's not me name dropping. That's not me being, you know, I'm going to say, no, that's not about me trying to brag or anything like that or flex.
I'm just that is me saying
football, my opinion would be, why do you care? You should not be, not one NFL player should pay attention to anything I stupidly say, but they do. And so if they pay attention to dumb me, I assure you they pay attention to Offensive Rookie of the Year. I assure you they pay attention to dumb stuff
like
that.
I'm just wondering if you legitimately believe.
They absolutely pay attention to, Tom Brady's washed up. 100% they do.
Just one thing I want to say though is that like, you really believe, and this is what you're saying, so you're believing this, that like sidelines, middle of the game, competitive atmosphere, John Gruden sitting there thinking to himself, like, I know that Josh Jacobs is a little bit, he's tired after 7 straight runs, but let's make sure we get him another touchdown right here. Like, you really believe that? Like, Sean McVay is as fantasy friendly as a coach as there is, and he was putting Malcolm Brown in all the time last year. I don't know. I just think fundamentally,
I believe that specific example? No, I do not. I do not think that John Gruden is worried about awards when it comes to that. But do I think that when they are game planning, when they are planning out their entire offense, when they're sitting there on Wednesday saying, putting in what they want to do, do I think John Gruden says, hey, like, I want Josh Jacobs in there in our jumbo package. I want Josh Jacobs in at the goal line. I want Josh Jacobs here and here and here. Yeah, I do think that.
Okay.
I think he's also, by the way, I think he's their best offensive player. And so John Gruden, who wants to win football games for the Raiders in their first year in Las Vegas, even though they're not going to be playing in front of any fans.
Yeah, right.
I think he is going to get a massive, massive workload. I do not have the same concerns about the competition that you do. So I am in on Josh Jacobs as a top 10 running back this year.
Yeah. All right, so I'll just say that, just to put a bow on it, it's not that the players are so daunting that around him. It's just the idea that, again, the guy broke his shoulder last year. I think running back 15, which is not an insult to Josh Jacobs.
Played
it's
through
where
it.
He was that.
He played through his broken shoulder.
Correct, and that's the thing, is that maybe they don't want to have him play through a broken shoulder again this year.
Then, let's bring in Stefania then for a second. That's a fluke injury. That's not something like that didn't happen because of usage. A broken shoulder can happen on the first play from scrimmage. It's not because he had however many carries he had. Right, Stefania? Do you think Josh Jacobs is an injury concern?
I think the way he plays, you know, it's kind of like we talk about Cam Newton, and the way he plays, he is potentially at risk. Look, this was an injury. I agree with you. that it was a fluke. It could happen at any time. It was a fluke injury, but it definitely got made worse by him continuing to aggravate it as he played. It's the
nature
of the position, too.
Wonderful, wonderful insight from you. We got to get to the wide receiver, Stefania.
That's what I heard.
Stefania, before we discuss the Raiders wide receivers, we might be most interested in, how about an injury update on Tyrell Williams?
Yeah, injured in practice last week. Vic Tuffer of The Athletic reporting that he's going to try and play through a torn labrum in his shoulder after taking the next couple of weeks off to rehab it. So just refresher, a labrum is the cartilage ring in your shoulder, and it actually helps improve shoulder stability. You need the labrum intact to have maximum stability in your shoulder. The issue for him will be, if he tries to play through a torn labrum, number one, can he get full range of motion to get his arm up overhead to be able to catch those passes that are placed, you know, especially up in that like overhead and back behind you position. Number two, diving on an outstretched arm can really aggravate this type of injury. And number three, contact. So these are all three things that he will have to engage in on a regular basis at the position. And so my question is twofold. Number one, can he be ready for week one? We don't know the answer to that yet. And then number two, even if he is ready for week one, can he stay healthy enough to perform? And I don't think we're going to know that until we see him. And even then, every week's going to be a risk. You know, he did play through a torn labrum in his other shoulder while he was a Charger, and he played pretty effectively. He ultimately needed surgery on it, but every injury is different, so you can't necessarily compare that episode to this one.
All right, Stefania, this is a tricky one here, but we appreciate the insight. I'll come back to you in just a couple of minutes here. So we're going to put four wide receivers in a category, Matthew, of basically the late round flyer bucket. We have, as we just mentioned, Tyrell Williams, who Stefania, you know, we'll see if he actually plays, but at least there's a chance. Henry Ruggs, the third, their 12th overall pick, their first pick this year in the draft, fastest player at the combine this year. You guys all know his credentials. Hunter Renfro, out of Clemson last year, who finished with nearly 50 catches in just 13 games. And then also Bryan Edwards, their third-round pick this year out of South Carolina. A reminder, the depth was so great this year in this year's draft that the 80th overall pick this year might be like the 40th overall pick in a lot of other years.
Yeah, and the buzz of there's been a lot of Bryan Edwards hype and buzz out of Raiders camp.
So any of these players that you – so if I don't think you're swinging on too many of – I don't think you're swinging on multiple Raiders late in your draft.
Correct.
But if you are – making a selection of a Raiders pass catcher, not named Darren Waller, who is it late in the draft? Or do you have a clear hierarchy within that group of four?
I don't. I mean, I think there's interesting things with all of them. So I'll take Henry Ruggs off the top, right?
Okay.
And but here's what I mean by that. He's going much, much earlier than any of the other guys. And I don't, like, he made my hate list this year. He's the highest ranked Raiders wide receiver that I have. But he made my hate list because of where he's going in overall drafts. He's going ahead of like Sterling Shepard, ahead of Brandon Cooks, ahead of Deontay Johnson. He's ahead of a lot of guys that I like much more than Henry Ruggs that have had proven success in the NFL. Again, this is an offense, remember, that was 28th in pass percentage. They were 21st in pass attempts per game. That was, you know, bottom half of the league in red zone pass percentage as well. It's, again, one of the reasons why I like Josh Jacobs. I believe, once again, they will be run heavy. They will certainly favor the run more than the pass this year. And so how much volume is there really to go around in this passing offense? Do I think Ruggs will have some big plays? I do. I suppose, and I, you know, listen, I like Ruggs if he were to drop. Sure, I kind of think Hunter Renfro is interesting. Finished the season strong. Had a couple of really nice games there at the end, especially for PPR leagues. Kind of a nice little slot receiver there. And by the way, but Bryan Edwards wouldn't surprise me if he came out and blew the roof off the doors. And Lynn Bowden Jr. also, by the way, is really interesting. I don't know if we're qualifying him as a wide receiver,
running back
on our game.
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't give you an answer there. The fact is that they're all worthy of late round flyers, but there's not one that I'm like sitting there going like, boy, I really, you know, the way like I'm like really like Paris Campbell.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
gotcha.
They're just sort of like, okay. Like, if I'm in a deeper league draft, like in our 16-league war room league draft where I have pick 16, like, I'm probably going to have a lot of Raiders. Like, I'm going to be like, all right, who's left? I got Hunter Renfro. Devontae Booker. Oh, I'll be there like in the third round.
I mean,
oh, field talk of Devontae Booker. Maybe I should take him because that's who will be left.
Let's be honest though, right? Like you have your third pick comes before my third pick in this draft. Like you're miscalculating how this all works. Maybe
I know you
might
probably,
be your first time playing fantasy.
You're gonna snag Booker in the second.
Yeah. If I had to make a pick on one of these guys,
yeah,
I would just go with Henry Ruggs and just game changer potential. More so than any of the other players. Yeah. And I understand the camp reports haven't been down, but I think there's been more buzz about Bryan Edwards so far in camp. But I'm just going to trust the guy that last year, basically, for an Alabama offense that had two players drafted in the first round at wide receiver, has more coming down the pike, was the most dynamic out of all of those players.
Here's my question, though. I don't disagree with you. Again, Ruggs is my highest-ranked Raiders wide receiver.
I understand
but
the ADP.
You prefer Ruggs at his ADP than any of these other guys who are free in drafts.
Much later is what I'm saying. I agree with you that he's being overdrafted
that's my whole point.
To the outlook. But still,
We both have Ruggs highest.
Yep.
Okay.
Let's talk about Darren Waller. Wall the baller, your Wall best call baller. Of last year. Finished last season as tight end 6, nearly 14 points per game. The limiting factor for him was just 3 receiving touchdowns last year for Darren Waller. His ADP right now, Matthew, is 6th amongst tight ends and 6th round in general. It's not the discrepancy we have between him and his tight end ADP. You have him at 5, I am at 6, Daniel has him at 5. But is that too much of a premium in the 6th round to be paying on Darren Waller for a guy that has, it would seem, much more competition for targets this year because of all those wide receivers we just discussed?
The weird part on Darren Waller, and I appreciate that. That was like, you know, that was a call that worked out for me last year in a big way. But he's a guy that didn't even get an end zone target in 11-15 games last year, right? You know, I mean, and it's just weird. So they have Jason Witten there. They have Foster Moreau, who actually had more touchdowns.
Yeah,
they locked Foster Moreau. They had more touchdowns there. I have him at number 60 overall, so I have him as a 7th round pick. Mm. So he is going higher in the overall than I would have, a round higher. So I guess, yes, if you go by my ranks, slightly higher. I think he's fine. I like Darren Waller as a player. I actually like him a lot. But to your point, I think this is a run-first offense. I think there's a lot of competition for targets, not just in the wide receivers, but also suddenly the tight end room got a little bit more crowded. Like, I don't think Jason Witten's a fantasy factor, but do I think he plays enough snaps that he saps a little bit?
Right.
Possibly.
Yeah, I was going to say, there, you don't sign him to have him sit on the bench. He's going to play 25 to 40% of the snaps, I would think. And
yeah,
if they play 2 tight end sets, like, that means somebody is getting moved off the field a little bit. So I'm with you. It's probably a little bit of a richer premium than we probably would prefer. I also think that, like, philosophically, he's not going to be a player that's going to bring you negative value, right? So, like, you're still going to get a tight end you can rely upon most weeks. So maybe we're a little bit less optimistic than his overall ADP, but not by much.
Yeah, you hope there's a little bit more positive touchdown regression, or you hope that they look for him in the end zone. I mean, it's not like they looked for him in the end zone a lot and then he just got unlucky. They just didn't look for him for whatever reason down there. They used him as a decoy a lot more. What I will say, though, is that if he winds up in like the 7th round, I'm fine with it. Again, he's my top. I have him as the 5th tight end, but I will say that he's the start of the next tier. That I do think it, Kelce, Kittle, Andrews, Ertz, that is a tier. And then there's another tier, and so he starts the next tier. As I've said, my philosophy this year on tight ends has been I want to either be one of the first or one of the last in my league to get a tight end. And at pick 16, I'm most likely going to be the last. Yeah, Jason Witten might be my starting
so
tight end.
So salty. Chargers coming up next, but first,
I'm a bitterberry. On brand for me. Hashtag bitterberry.
Here's a fact for you. Not all synthetic motor oils are created the same. Crude oil is like a bag of mismatched rocks, all different sizes and shapes coming together. Natural gas is more like a big bag of marbles, all uniform in size and shape and designed to work together, reducing friction in your engine. That's why when Pennzoil reinvented motor oil, they started with natural gas, not crude. Pennzoil synthetic base oil is 99.5% free from the impurities you'd find in crude oil. So the next time you need to change your oil, remember to ask for Pennzoil synthetic motor oil made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence IVA wear test using SAE 5W-30.
You know, total male body grooming is essential nowadays, but a lot of you are hesitant to manscape. You're afraid you might cut yourself, which is understandable. Well, that's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest below-the-waist trimmer ever created. And they just released their new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to advanced skin-safe technology pioneered by Manscaped. I actually use this everywhere from the neck below and from the waist up before I did any of the downstairs stuff to make sure that it worked. It is a fantastic razor. When I tell you this thing is premium, I mean premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave. The waterproof technology allows you to groom in the shower, guys! In the shower! One of the coolest features is there's this little LED light which illuminates the grooming areas for closer and more precise trimming. We want you to experience Manscaped's new Lawnmower 3.0 firsthand for yourself with 20% off and free shipping when you use the code FFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FFF only at manscaped.com.
Let's head over now to the Los Angeles Chargers for part two of Double Trouble, and Melvin Gordon is gone. Austin Eckler is not just the starting running back of the Chargers with less competition, Matthew. He's also a lot richer. He's one of the great success stories from the undrafted free agent pool in recent years. He signed a four-year extension worth over $24 million maximum. So happy for a guy who went to Western State in Colorado to play his football. He was RB6 last year on a points-per-game basis, 19.31 points per game. And yet, sometimes maybe it's because he doesn't have the traditional sort of body frame of a workhorse running back. Maybe because it was his first time doing it. Maybe because his carries were low relative to other workhorses last year. Do you have any concern, though, about Austin Eckler repeating his 2019 performance and bringing you RB1 return?
Here's my concern.
Okay.
People that are drafting him later are morons. That's my concern.
Oh, okay.
That's my concern is like, what are you doing? I do not understand. I don't understand how he is going as late as he is. I don't understand the fantasy community that has suddenly bailed on Austin Eckler.
Are people bailing on
him? His overall ADP is like early third round.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Wait, what? Like, so we're all in on Miles Sanders, who has a 5-game sample size of being a stud, right? People are all over Kenyon Drake, who has an 8-game sample size of being a stud last year. And yet Austin Eckler, in the 4 games without Melvin Gordon, was the second best running back in fantasy. He was 4 points less than Christian McCaffrey in that span.
Okay, fine.
But hang on, no. And then Melvin Gordon shows back up. And then from the time that Melvin Gordon was there, he was the 5th best running back in fantasy. So I don't know what you think about Justin Jackson or Joshua Kelly, but I assure you, they're not as good as Melvin Gordon at this stage of their NFL careers. And by the way, Austin Eckler, do we all agree that Austin Eckler is probably going to get more touches this year? He has led all running backs in fantasy points per touch, minimum 100 carries. This is a guy who is insanely efficient. He actually, if you've ever read any interviews with Austin Eckler, he talks about that. He talks about how
he's deep into the fantasy community.
He's deep into it. He understands the efficiency. He loves it. And I know people are worried about, oh, Phillip Rivers to Tyrod Taylor. Like, what? Like, I get it. I know that there's a connection there, and Rivers likes to dump the ball off, and Tyrod holds the ball a little bit too long. But I assure you, to your point, they paid this man. Their head coach, Anthony Lynn, former NFL running back Anthony Lynn, is not all of a sudden going to go, you know what I need on this team? Less Austin Eckler. Like, they showed last year, they're not scared to run him between the tackles. They're not scared to use him on the goal line. This is a guy that's going to be a running back that is, especially on a team that honestly doesn't have a ton of weapons and that have, you know, some questionable depth behind him, Eckler's going to have a ton of work in a better offense than you think. Mm. In PPR scoring, how is this guy going so low field?
So I'm going to try to make the case. I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with it, but he had 132 carries last year. So even in a workhorse role, and I understand that Melvin Gordon was part of the mix from week 5 on last year, still 132 carries, not a huge, huge number, right? We're talking about Ezekiel Elliott at twice that, maybe even more this year. I think, Matthew, and I could be wrong here, I think part of the thinking is, you know, last year the stars sort of aligned in this regard. The Chargers cannot get out of their own way last year. They were constantly digging themselves into holes. They were constantly in the perfect game script for Austin Eckler to have 8, 9, 10 catch performances. Now, the counter to that is, although previously on the podcast I've spoken of other running backs that are in the neighborhood of Christian McCaffrey as a pass catcher amongst running backs. The two best pass catcher running backs in the NFL, in my opinion, Christian McCaffrey is in a class of his own, and then it's Austin Ekeler. So as much as maybe his workload won't be as substantial as other workhorse running backs as a runner, and as much as maybe 92 catches might be a little bit less attainable because they won't be playing from behind constantly because the overall approach here will be a bit more conservative. You go from one of the most turnover-prone quarterbacks over the past year to almost literally the least interception-prone quarterback in the NFL, which is Tyrod Taylor, that maybe they have a few less opportunities for Austin Ekeler to have 8 or 10 catch performances. But that's a long way of saying, like, I'm not totally sold on it. Like, I think it's probably, I have him as running back 8. So I'm confident. Like, if I see him going somewhere between picks 9 and 14, I think to myself, yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, the big difference is in the overall. I have him at running back 10, but I'm at 11th overall. Like, so I have him as a, you know, late first round, early second round pick. His current ADP, as we've talked about, is in the third. He's going in the third round. And so I just think that's insane. And, like, I can't believe that I have to bang the drum here for Austin Ekeler, but apparently I do.
Yeah, I think I just
think he's being massively disrespected and underappreciated by the fantasy community.
Well, let's change that. He's now making a lot of money. Let's all appreciate him as much as the Chargers do. I was thinking about wide receivers this year who maybe have been affected most in perception right now based off of a quarterback change. And I think that there are two that come to mind where our value has dropped most dramatically for them because of a quarterback change. And I think it's a tie, or maybe it's a 1A, 1B, however you want to phrase it, with Keenan Allen and Julian Edelman. But in your opinion, is Keenan Allen the wide receiver most affected by a quarterback change this offseason? If this were not Tyrod Taylor, but it was Phillip Rivers coming back for another year, we might be talking about Keenan Allen as one of our 5 ranked wide receivers, top 5 ranked wide receivers. Right now, Matthew, I am at 19, you am at 21, Daniel has him at 20. His ADP is 22nd amongst wide receivers. This is a dramatic change for him at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, look, and he's fine. And so, look, Keenan Allen's a nice player.
Oh, he's outstanding as a player.
Yeah, but he's, like, we expect a more conservative offense with Tyrod Taylor under center, and we don't know how long he is the starting quarterback. Do they turn to Justin Herbert at some point, right?
Is that good for his value, though?
I don't know.
Okay.
We don't know what it'll be like as a pro.
I would think it is. I would think that I would probably prefer if Justin Herbert won the job tomorrow. I would be more bullish on Keenan Allen right away.
Fair enough. Certainly has that potential here. I don't know. And it's different offenses, everything like that, right? But for me, when Tyrod Taylor was in Buffalo,
there you go. Yeah,
you know, they averaged under 30 passes a game, right?
Dead last in the NFL.
Yeah,
dead last for over 3 year span.
So how much of that is Tyrod versus the offensive system? But
well, Anthony Lynn was on that staff there.
Yes, he was. He was the running backs coach. He was the assistant head coach. He was the head coach, interim head coach. Like, he had a bunch of roles. There was a lot of turnover. Anthony Lynn had a quick rise in Buffalo.
He did, yeah.
But yes, that's the expectation. It's one of the reasons why he's comfortable with Tyrod as a starter. He knows him well from their time together in Buffalo. And when they were in Buffalo, they were averaging under 30 passes a game.
Yeah.
And so if you sit there and you say, well, Hunter Henry, currently healthy, we'll get to Stefania and Mike Williams, but you've also got Keenan Allen. We expect Austin Ekeler to have a big role out of the backfield. Just how much volume is there for Keenan Allen?
Yeah.
Again, we think he's a very good player there. I have him at wide receiver 21. You have him at 19. We're both higher than the consensus. He's going at 22. But you and I feel more comfortable with him as a wide receiver 2 than as a wide receiver 1.
Yeah, and I want to make it clear.
Which is what he has been previously in his career.
Not that you disagree with this. I want to make it clear. Like, I don't think he's a good player. I think he's an elite player. Like, one of the best wide receivers in football. It's just he's playing with a different offense than he has played for many years. And you mentioned Hunter Henry being a factor, Austin Ekeler being a factor. Potentially Mike Williams could be a factor as well, Stefania. But for a guy that has dealt with some serious injuries early in his career, he's now dealing with another one. What do you know on Mike Williams?
Field, if we were doing this in the news or noise segment, I would be telling you this is significant news, the nature of the injury that Mike Williams has. Now, the Los Angeles Times reported that he made a diving catch in practice on Sunday, and the shoulder pads were removed because they were playing during a period where there was supposed to be less intensity, but that meant he dove unprotected on that shoulder. The report from NFL Network saying his collarbone's intact leads you to then suspect that he has an AC sprain, which happens when you dive and land on the point of your shoulder, and the ligaments there get damaged. The question is it a minor sprain, which potentially could happen back in a couple of weeks, or is it something more severe that could take multiple weeks to come back from? Right now, they're calling him week to week, which is never as good as day to day, obviously. But I think it hints at the idea that he is going to miss some time and potentially not be available for the start of the season. Much like we were talking about with Tyrell Williams, this kind of injury can limit your range of motion, keep you from being able to get your hand overhead, make it tough to dive and land on that shoulder, and to some degree, make it tough to take contact. So all of those things are things to watch. The team hasn't commented on his injury specifically, but there's definitely some concern in Los Angeles.
All right, Stefania, thank you for that. Unfortunately, talking about Mike Williams with an injury light again. I'll say I was sort of excited because one thing Tyrod Taylor does really well as a thrower is push the football down the field. He's got this sort of nice arcing ability to throw these bucket throws. But for now, I can't imagine anything more than a late-round flyer on Mike Williams. But Hunter Henry might be a different conversation. He's healthy. He's tight end 8 last year, Matthew. Had a pretty solid season in the 12 games. Remember, he had that one big injury, but he returned and played really well for them. Got the franchise tag. You're a little bit less optimistic than I am on Hunter Henry. And is the argument against Hunter Henry basically what we applied to Keenan Allen, low volume? Or is it maybe reflective that you have other tight ends you just believe in more this year? Because I actually think in terms of talent, I am at 7, and I think that's about where he is, like one of the 7 or so best tight ends in football.
I'm at 12.
Yeah.
Made the hate list for me this year.
So why so down?
So a couple reasons why. So first off, in games in which he doesn't score a touchdown, he averages under 7 fantasy points per game. So he is very touchdown dependent.
Mm.
Okay. He's never played all 16 games in an NFL season. So he's injury prone. He's touchdown dependent. And we expect this to be a low-volume offense.
Mm.
So all those things make me very concerned, especially in terms of where he's going. And if you consider him, let's say he's the number 2 pass catcher in this offense, right?
Okay.
Okay, so we all agree Keenan Allen is number 1. Let's pretend he's the number 2.
I mean, even if we do that, Austin Ekeler is definitely the number 2 in this offense, right?
Right, exactly.
But he's number 1.
Let's play along.
This is for argument. Yep.
Yeah, this is for argument's sake.
Yep.
Pass catcher number 2 on a game-to-game basis when Tyrod Taylor was in Buffalo. Forget who it was, right? Like, got 9.4 fantasy points per game on under 5 targets. So regardless of who the number 2 pass catcher is, we looked at every game that Tyrod Taylor was a starter, and the number 2 pass catcher for Taylor in Buffalo averaged 9.4 fantasy points per game, had under 5 targets a game. Last year, that would have been tight end 12. And that assumes, again, to your point, Daniel, that we're not even talking about Austin Ekeler, because I think there's an argument to be made that Austin Ekeler is easily the number 2 pass catcher on this offense.
Yeah.
So again, touchdown dependent, injury prone, low volume offense, and we don't expect Tyrod Taylor to throw in the red zone and the end zone to the tight end as much as Phillip Rivers did when he was in Los Angeles.
Pretty simple for me is that first time for him last year playing without Antonio Gates alongside him yielded a pretty solid season, right? Even in 12 games, he still had over 650 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns. You say he's touchdown dependent. I say he's a touchdown maker, and I think there is a lot of relevance we can carry from Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. I also will concede that I believe the pass catching group much superior here than he was playing with in Buffalo. So that's why I'm more of a believer in Hunter Henry.
It's just weird to me to say we're going to knock Keenan Allen, who we both agree is a great player.
Sure,
yeah. We're going to knock Keenan Allen because of Tyrod Taylor, but we're not worried about it with Hunter Henry.
I didn't say that I'm not worried about it. I just said that, you know, again, this is also tight end. We're like, the options thin quickly. Wide receiver, we've got an embarrassment of riches. Like, for me, if I'm bypassing Keenan Allen, it might be because I'm landing Cooper Kupp or Robert Woods. Like, for tight ends, like, I think there's a case that, you know, the depth is just not nearly the same. So there's a different opportunity cost bypassing Keenan Allen than there would be someone like Hunter Henry, who I think in talent alone is one of the six or seven best tight ends in the NFL.
We will agree to disagree.
Well, we'll see how the season plays out.
We will see how the season plays out, Field Yates.
Board bet?
That's exactly what
you want to put the difference?
Yeah, let's do board bet. You want to do a board bet on this?
I say Hunter Henry is a top 10 tight end this year.
Ooh. You have him at seven. Seven. Well,
okay, so how do we usually do board bets? Do we split the difference? Is that what we normally do?
If it's 10, it's a push. If it's anything above 10, Matthew would win. Anything below 10, Field would win. If you did it that
way around.
Yes.
I have the opposite of that. Top 10.
The opposite of that.
It's fine. Seems like you're, but all right, because you were just waxing poetic about it, but fine. That's fine.
What would we normally do? We would normally split the difference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, normally.
Right.
But
so
I mean,
you want to change
but
the
you
rules?
Just sent a lot. You know, just, I mean, I just thought you might be more confident because you just had a love letter to Hunter.
It's like
Henry.
When you're playing game of pickup hoops with your brother in the backyard.
Like, that's exactly what it is.
Playing to 11, and then I go up 11-4. No, we're playing to 21. I thought we said 11. Yeah, no, 21.
I say Hunter Henry is not a top 10 fantasy tight end this year.
I say Hunter Henry is a top 9 fantasy tight end this year.
Yeah,
put it on the board.
Put it on the board.
All right, let's have a couple of social. Do we have time for social questions?
Yeah, we got a couple of social questions here. This one comes from PC Hollenbeck.
XFL superstar Donald Parnham, by the way, backing up Hunter Henry for those of you in deep tight end leagues.
What do you got?
Okay, so PC Hollenbeck wants to know, what has been your biggest tiebreaker amongst player this year? Is it team familiarity? Is it injury history? Is it position scarcity? How is it in this different season that you are looking at tiebreakers?
I'm going to let Matthew answer this one because I know he's been harping on team familiarity a lot this preseason.
That's what it is. For me, it's team familiarity. It's like being in the same system. And then, you know, once you get there, it's like you want an offense that you expect to score a lot of points, whether it's because they have a bad defense, because it's a high-flying offense. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm going for team familiarity and veterans and people that have done it for longer sample sizes.
Okay. This one comes from Mark. When is Matthew going to release his fantasy ride or die for this season?
That's a great question. When am I going to do that?
We
should do that. Well, usually we do it on the fantasy show on ESPN Plus. I have to do that. I mean, you know, and then I'm sure you'll get, if anyone that has the, here's what you should do is you should download the free Fantasy Life app. All right, 100% free, where the alerts absolutely crush. I'm sure you will get an alert before anyone else about who my fantasy ride or die is. But yeah, you know what? I need to do that. I'm gonna go to the lab. I'm gonna start cooking up some numbers. It was going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but then when Damian Williams opted out, I thought that was too obvious.
Yeah, I agree. But
that's who it was going.
Usually
to be.
It comes to it. Just sort of we're right, talking well, about a player.
It was going
to
be
like,
the draft. I mean.
I'm doing it.
Daniel knows because we were talking about this on the show. We were going to do a post-NFL draft show. Do I announce that CEH is my ride or die? And they were like, no, let's hold off on it. Like, we literally had that whole discussion, and then Damian Williams ruined everything.
All right.
Caring about his health and safety and his family.
Was that your...
I don't know.
Kidding. That's my Twitter troll voice.
Oh, I thought that was an impression of the great impersonator... Joey Molinaro.
Oh, I love Joey. No,
he is
it's not.
Hilarious.
Joey, yes. Follow him on Twitter.
That was his impression of Andrew Luck's impression. All right,
he's
Daniel.
Great. Joey's great. Hilarious.
Geico trivia question of the day heading to Kyle.
You guys talked about Darren Waller, so we got some Waller the Baller trivia. He became the second tight end ever drafted in the sixth round or later, undrafted counts, to record a 90-catch season. I need the name of the other one. And before you complain, I'll give you a hint. He turned 36 years old earlier this month.
I'm 33, for those that are wondering. All right, Stefania.
He doesn't look much like Field Yates.
Okay, no more hints. Hold on.
All right.
We're going to give everybody... Stefania, we're going to come to you in 1 second. Matthew, I believe, is scribbling down his answer, and we are going to go with Stefania first. What say you?
I thought of this name quickly because I love this guy so much. And sixth round draft pick by my 49ers, Delanie Walker.
Ooh, nice pick right there, Delanie Walker. I'm going to go with, I don't think that's correct. Matthew, what do you got?
I think that is correct.
Interesting.
I'm so bitter. I wish I thought about that. I don't know where he was drafted, I'm going
age.
Jason Witten, Waller's teammate.
The hint of the age.
Jason Witten, it was a third round
pick. The hint
pick.
Of the
so
age.
I got that one wrong.
It was him as well. I think I might actually have this one.
Nice.
Antonio Gates, Kent State Golden Flash power forward. He recently, I got to figure he's close to 36, right?
I love the idea of Field Yates, but your trust Matthews got here to trust Stefania. Again, Stefania Bell with the right answer.
Delanie Walker?
Delanie Walker in 2015.
Antonio Gates never had 90 catches in a season. That stuns me. Wow. Wow. Really?
That's a great call, Stefania.
I've
good
loved
job.
Delanie
great
Walker.
Job by you, must Stefania.
Have been, must have been with the Titans. Well, here's what gave it away to me. I followed Delanie Walker's career. I love Delanie Walker. I knew he was drafted by the Niners in the sixth round. When Kyle hinted at 36 years old, I'm like, he's got to be in about that range.
I got you, Stefania.
That was
Antonio Gates, 89 grabs in 2005, Field. I'm so sorry.
Wow, that is impressive.
Kyle,
good job by Kyle. Stefania's
like
on a heater.
In the fifth or sixth round at pick 16, do you think Delanie Walker will be there for me?
Hopefully. Hopefully, maybe, fingers crossed, he'll make it down to you.
All right, there you go. Matthew being bitter again. Stop. By tomorrow, he'll be all happy. Stefania, you congratulations on the fifth overall pick. I can't wait for you to win the league this year. We look forward to that. We are coming
your pick
back.
Is what? You and the Irish Twins, you and Matt
third
Harrington.
Overall pick, me and Matt Harrington looking for a win. We're back with Double Trouble on Wednesday. Until then, we'll talk to you later.
Peace out. You're an 06010. Never gonna hustle in case you didn't know. Matthew Berry, TMR.
You guys go ahead, give me grief. Being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me because I don't think you could.
Jailbait Field Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Field Yates. At Field Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Barry convert you.
Secret Squirrel Daniel Dunn.
Make